From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 30th, 2021. The Brewers are at home this weekend with the LA Dodgers, and the Bucks are at the Forum all of this week. Here's a silly online dating story. Trying to impress a woman on his first actual date after meeting her online, the guy bragged that he was part of the January 6th riot on the nation's capital. Who says online dating doesn't work? Well, he does, because she turned him into the feds. And one more bit of dating news. A Japanese man was dating 35 women simultaneously. He's not rich or handsome, but he has charm. So much charm that he scammed all 35 women into buying him birthday presents. Well, he was arrested for fraud, but you got to admire his time management skills. Okay, can we please put an end to gender reveal parties? A knucklehead in New Hampshire thought it would be cool to blow up a bundle of 80 sticks of dynamite to announce the sex of the baby. And the explosion caused damage for blocks around. So now instead of pink and blue stuff, Dad will be spending his weekends wearing orange. And finally, from Florida, so you know this is going to be good, there is something called the Miami Zoom Court. And it's just what you think it is, trial by Zoom. Well, a woman was getting butt injections, and don't get ahead of me here, and she was Zooming it to her friends, because isn't that what you do? Well, the video somehow crossed over into the Zoom courtroom feed, and guess what everybody saw, including the jury. Needless to say, security is on the job and trying to get to the bottom of this.
I got it.
On the podcast today.
Yeah, we get it, Max. Thanks.
Audrey Singh. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, you left us hanging on the gender reveal here. I did just do a quick Google search. It does look like they're having a boy. So congratulations to the lucky dynamite owner. Overall, for the week, a bit of mixed results. The NASDAQ down 0.4%, 54 points. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.5%, 164 points. And the S&P 500 meeting the definition of making a buck, up just 1 point this week, essentially flat. For the year, the NASDAQ now up 8.5%, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 11.3%, and the S&P 500 up a robust 11.8%. Quick look at performance, the 10-year U.S. Treasury moved just slightly higher during the week, continues to be fairly range-bound after the early year significant move higher. You know, I think a great place to jump off this week, Joel, is just looking at some of the economic data in particular. You know, not just here in the U.S., but, you know, more, I think, data that we've seen overseas now. First and foremost, you know, putting the U.S. GDP number up against what Europe has now reported. The U.S. seems to be on its way out of the recession, while Europe seems to be, if nothing else, just kind of mired in what continues to be some contraction.
Yeah, Kyle, the GDP numbers for the U.S. were up 1.6% from a year ago. So we're actually, you know, above where we were from when the recession officially began. And in Europe, they're going backwards. Some are calling it a double dip recession already, that they've, you know, come out of recession and now they've gone back in. You know, you can look at several things that might be different. The rollout of vaccines has been, although it was troubled at first, it's been a little smoother lately in the U.S., a little more successful compared to other countries. And also stimulus. That's a big thing. The Congress and presidents have put a lot of money into stimulating the economy. And, you know, as opposed to the last recession in the financial collapse, there was more reluctance to do that. There was some help at first, but then it was just sort of a little more hands off. And you'll remember that was a rare recession in which other countries led the U.S. out of the recession. China actually grew a lot, and that helped the U.S. get out of that recession. This time around, especially compared to Europe, the U.S. is doing pretty well.
And you mentioned, obviously, spending, government spending is a big part of that. And we saw, in household income is just another example of economic data that I think supports that. We saw huge increases in household income in the latest report.
That's right. Yeah, the philosophy with the stimulus was to give it to people who will spend it. We always remind people that two-thirds of the U.S. economy is driven by consumer spending. So if you give government money to people who you think are going to spend it, that should help is how the theory goes. 21% personal income went up in the month of March. It's a record in more than 60 years of data of covering this. 21% is a lot. And spending went up by 4%. So that means that you think there's a difference there, and a lot more people are saving a lot more money. What were the numbers I was looking at? So in March, personal savings, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, personal savings were $4.6 trillion. $4.6 trillion in personal savings. That compares with February. That's three times more than what we had in February of 2020 when the pandemic started.
And, I think as we look at where that money is going, you look at, for example, the impact of low interest rates, it's driven home prices higher. As we talk about the potential for inflation, well, one area where we've seen significant price inflation is in housing prices.
That's right, Kyle. We had numbers this month from S&P CoreLogic, the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. And that's, we're seeing year-to-year increases, in home prices that are double-digit percentage. The same thing with numbers that we were getting from the National Association of Realtors. And part of it is the demand. You've got low mortgage rates. You've got a demand of people who want to move. The S&P folks were talking about that they're actually seeing the trend that we suspect a lot of people were moving from congested urban areas and apartments to suburban houses. So that's part of the demand there. And then the supply has been low. We just haven't been building houses at the pace we were, 10, 15 years ago. So because of that, the prices are going up. And there's a case where, inflation is far outrunning, overall inflation.
And I think as we look at kind of expectations for the future, I think we've seen confidence in housing. We've seen confidence in any number of other areas, and that's continuing to show up in the survey data as well.
That's right. We had numbers this week from consumer sentiment from University of Michigan, from consumer confidence from the Conference Board, and both of those are showing that because of the money that's in the economy right now, because more things are opening up, because control of the pandemic and how businesses are doing, that there's a lot more confidence and people are seeing the job market better. They're seeing their income prospects better. So they're planning on spending more money. Because of that, they're expecting higher prices, that inflation's coming along. But again, we had two measures this week of inflation using the number that the Fed likes to look at. And both of those show that inflation remains below that 2% target. That's not to say that we're not going to get above there. But Jerome Powell, the chair of the Fed this week, said that it's going to be a while and that he doesn't expect, he's not worried about getting above that 2% mark very quickly and that it's not going to be there very long.
And we are looking at any number of consumer goods companies talking about modest price increases. We're looking at certain travel costs going up pretty significantly. If you're trying to rent a car this summer, good luck finding something for any reasonable amount of money. And in some places, good luck finding anything at all. And so I think, we are seeing some signs that inflation is coming into the picture a little bit. But there's a difference between a little bit of inflation and inflation in certain areas and inflation that's, running far beyond what the Fed thinks is appropriate. And I think that's the argument we continue to make for why there's some optimism for the path ahead that inflation isn't just going to end the party, right? The fear, of course, is that low interest rates support higher stock prices, that if inflation takes off, we all of a sudden have to raise interest rates. The Fed taking away that proverbial punch bowl ends the party, right? And so I think the biggest concern we have about inflation is what it means for markets more broadly. And I think the reality is that just isn't as significant of a concern as maybe some people would make it out to be. It doesn't mean it's not something we should be thinking about. It doesn't mean that as investors, we haven't found ways to prepare portfolios for that. You know, I think absolutely, you know, it's a conversation that balanced investors should be having, right? How are you prepared in the event that inflation is a little bit worse than we thought it was, that rates do have to tick higher to combat the potential for runaway inflation? But the reality is, I think we're just not seeing that yet. And so, you know, that's the interest rate piece of things. Dave, the other important part for investors is obviously earnings. We're now halfway through earnings season. And I think anyone would argue we're quite pleased with what the first quarters look like so far. You know, just compared to what we expected for the first quarter a month ago, we're 85% better in terms of where we think we'll finish the quarter than what we thought a month ago. And as you talk about what that means for stocks, potentially providing some more support for stock prices than what we otherwise thought.
Yeah, you know, Kyle, it has been, you know, obviously an expected increase, right? Because of the low bar from, you know, 12-month comparisons, but it is really gone well beyond those expectations and obviously very encouraging. You know, earnings, of course, are going to lead to additional cash on balance sheets, right? So you're talking about what opportunities that might bring for stock support. You know, Chris noted earlier today talking about how buybacks are returning with frequency here. And some of the big players out there have plans to make some pretty significant additional purchases of their stock. And that's been kind of a theme that we've seen over the last several years that has taken markets higher when we didn't think that maybe there was enough sentiment on the street to do so. And I think you're going to start to see that cash put into play in other areas too, with mergers and acquisitions picking up as well. So I think that there's a couple of those areas too that will help us, you know, potentially create some additional support for the stock market.
Yeah, Dave, what I love about that point is that, you know, buybacks are a function of CEO confidence or C-suite confidence or board confidence, the same for mergers and acquisitions. And what we've seen since the financial crisis is that corporations have just stockpiled cash, whether it's the largest tech names or banks or any number of other large U.S. corporations, they're sitting on mountains and mountains of cash. And on top of that, they borrowed money because they could do it cheaply. No concerns about paying that money back for a lot of those businesses. And so they had even more kind of dry powder to work with. And what we're seeing now is, you know, a whole slew of businesses that potentially are ripe for the picking, from the Googles and Apples and Amazons of the world, that are looking to either, you know, build out infrastructure or lower costs, whatever it may be. But I think what I'm encouraged by as we look at that is the fact that that's supportive of further growth, right? That when corporations start spending money, and we're talking about hundreds of billions or trillions of dollars worth of cash that can be spent here, when they start spending that money, that supports markets even further. It supports the economy. And some of that could go to the form of wages, a few reasons to believe that corporations might need to be paying workers a bit more than what they're paying right now, as the labor market continues to pick up. But the other piece of that is strategic acquisitions, returning cash to shareholders. And, you know, as we look at that, I think historically that was strictly some of the blue chip growth companies that a lot of people had in their portfolio. Chris, I know one of the things that you've been talking about is the fact that maybe the places we're looking to invest are different now. It used to be that you bought some of those big blue chip growths with lots of cash because those were the safe things to buy. The growth seemed pretty well locked in. If the valuations weren't great, it's okay because they were going to grow their way out of that trouble. And now I think we're in an environment where people are being a little more choosy about the risk they take, but still willing to take risk.
Yeah, Kyle, if you look back to the lows in March and April of last year, you know, when everybody felt rightfully so, concerned about the path forward, investors went to look for areas that were safe in the market. And typically in the past, we had thought of those as being your, you know, steady cash flow utilities, healthcare businesses, but that's transitioned more recently to, if you think about it, many of the large internet companies are internet-based utilities. I mean, Google has very steady cash flows. Apple has very steady cash flows. And they also have cash on the balance sheet in the tens to hundreds of billions of dollars. So the strength of their business and balance sheet led them to be seen as safe investments last year. And that's why in many cases, they're the ones that led the market out of the lows. But since, you know, the fall of last year, as investors began to feel more confident that, hey, the worst case scenario is off the table. You know, stimulus is here. It's supported the consumer. Investors have turned to look and say, well, where are the areas of the market that might see incredible rebound and growth as consumers have come back to the market? And they looked at those businesses that were hyper cyclical, that typically have less strong balance sheets, maybe sit on more debt, that would be able to grow earnings very quickly. Not the steady, you know, tech business names, but, you know, in many cases, consumer finance businesses or energy businesses that certainly wouldn't be considered safe, you know, a year ago, are now where investors are looking for growth opportunities.
You know, I think we talk about growth, we talk about how strong that returns have been in our portfolios. And one of the things that's led to is a lot of near retirees who have moved up that deadline a little bit, whether it's because they're realizing that, you know, life is short. That's the headline I keep seeing, right? Life is short, so I'm going to retire at 57 instead of 60. Or simply because, whether it's their housing, you know, their home price, whether it's their portfolio balances, or whether it's that they just haven't spent much money the last year and a half, and so they've been able to save a ton more. You've got a lot of individuals that are more ready to retire than they have been in years. And so you look at some of the studies that have been done by the Fed, by some other organizations out there. The New York Fed specifically says that less than a third of people, less than a third of Americans now plan to work past age 67. And I think, you know, you look at potentially 2 million plus people in the next few years set to retire, 55 and older set to retire. I think it really paints a picture for a labor market that might be a bit challenged. I mentioned it earlier, but it might mean that wages have to go up for some of these businesses. But the other thing is it sets up a pretty interesting conversation with, you know, many of our clients are probably in the same situation. And Dave, I know you're talking to retirees or near retirees every day. And maybe you're not getting this specific question yet, but I'm sure you've heard it at least once or twice. But what do you tell somebody right now who's seen immense market returns on their portfolio, who maybe had planned to retire 3 or 4 years from now, but they've moved that deadline up? You know, how are you kind of helping them guide that conversation to make sure that it really does make sense?
Well, Kyle, you got to be careful, right? I mean, you can get into a situation where you get these robust returns compacted into such a short time frame. I mean, you think about where we've come in the last 18 months, and you might get a little sense of a, you know, false sense of security, right? That, you know, I've made it to the end. But remember, that means that you got another 3, 4, 5 years of expenses to cover, right, in retirement. So while this is certainly giving people confidence, and rightly so, because it's real money, I do think you got to take a hard look at, okay, if I am going to retire early, you know, what are my healthcare, you know, coverage is going to be, if it's prior to 65 and Medicare access. And also realize that, you know, you can make a pretty strong case, and, you know, just looking at past cycles, that when you have these outsized returns bunched up in a few years, that typically you are sometimes stealing a little bit from future returns. So you can't just straight line what we've seen here recently into the future and expect that to carry you through retirement. So, you know, while this has been great for people's confidence and for their portfolios, it's also, you know, don't get tripped up and lulled into a false sense of security that, A, this is absolutely enough for you, and B, this is going to continue just like it has forever.
And Joel, we've got a newsletter coming out this afternoon, and you put together something I think that might help guide folks as well as they think through retirement. that'll be included in today's newsletter.
Yeah, Kyle, it's looking kind of beyond the money aspect of it, of looking at the lifestyle transition. And I think some people have taken the opportunity of the pandemic to rehearse their retirement a little bit. And it's a good idea, you know, regardless of where you are, you know, how soon you want to retire. And in fact, it helps give you a financial sense too, if you do it right, of what it's going to cost, what your expenditures are going to be, what your income is going to be like, so that before you retire, you can plan better for it. And getting back to the surveys and such that you referred to before, some of the research actually shows, and this happens every recession, that because of the recession, because of the pandemic, more people also have said, "Hey, I'm going to work longer. I can't imagine myself ever retiring." You know, we know that, and it's probably not true for the majority of the listeners of this podcast, but we know that there are a lot of people who just are ill prepared for retirement, and times like this, help them take notice of that. And so, you know, you got to hope that they're going to learn from this and get a little bit more prepared. And then as far as the repercussions on the workplace, again, you know, Jerome Powell said this week that it's an uneven growth that we're seeing in the economy. So while some people are better off because they've stayed working, because their investments have grown, their housing, value has gone up, and they're better prepared for retirement, there are a lot of people who are worse off. And then you have to think of the people who are retiring, are in good positions to be leaders, to remain leaders in their workplaces. And if they leave, it's going to be tougher maybe for some workplaces to be without them.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. And a strong reminder that, particularly in this recovery, but certainly in others in the past, there's a pretty big gap between the winners and the losers. And we've seen, I think, a number of people be left behind, even as, others have benefited sometimes from this. And so, as you look at kind of the impact, I think it's important to remember it hasn't been even across the board. Chris, as you kind of look at the week, as you look at the road ahead, other thoughts from you?
Well, I'd like to just, make another comment. Joel, I really enjoyed your article that's going to be in the newsletter. And I think it's important to note that, there's a piece to retirement that you can model on a spreadsheet. And then there's a piece to retirement that is a very personal, emotional side of how you feel the days, how you get that sense of self. And, the spreadsheet side is easy. That might be the easy part of figuring out, okay, what are the cash flows I need? How do I drive that from the portfolio? Your advisor can certainly help with that. But then there's the part of, when I wake up each morning, how do I feel? Or how do I even feel about seeing withdrawals come out of my portfolio instead of consistent contributions? And that is something that's very difficult, I think, for many people to wrap their heads around in advance of retirement. So I think it's a great piece that a lot of people should go out and read. And as you begin to think about retirement, think more than just, okay, where's the cash flow coming from? But, what am I going to do with my spare time? What's going to be, that sense of self that I'll have?
Well, thank you for that. As always, we enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.